You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This place is special.
Get asked all the time, where's your favorite place to take College Game Day? And I say every time, Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah.
This is the best crowd. Honestly, it's 6 in the morning here.
Yeah.
It's current. Yeah. It's raining. They don't care.
No, they don't.
These fans right here, pound for pound, are as good as any college football fans in the country.
This program is staged to compete and to win championships.
Oregon is going to be in the championship game. Can you believe the magical season this has become?
When we watch this film, does our effort beat theirs?
Here's Bo Nix. Guns it! Touchdown, Oregon!
Been making deposits. Time to cash a check.
Sound at Austin, which is deafening for an Oregon 15-point win. Chip Kelly still does not have a win against his former school, and we say farewell.
Man, it feels great to be a Duck.
Welcome to the QB11 Show. Presented by Scoop Duck with Doug, Andrew, and J-Hop. Here are the guys with the latest scoop.
Hello and welcome back to the QB11 Show presented by Scoop Duck. I am your host, Doug Scott, with my co-host and show's namesake, QB11. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Doug. Been a busy couple days here, but a good weekend. I got to have dinner with some cousins I hadn't seen in probably 2 years, unexpectedly on Saturday night. So that was nice. And yeah, I feel like life is good. How about you?
They just showed up on your doorstep and said, hey, you want to go to dinner?
No. So this time of year, for those who don't know that listen to the podcast, I live in Arizona. And this time of year, we are blessed by having spring training. And it was one of those things where they're not like close cousins, but they're like, I guess they'd be second cousins for me. But they just like, oh crap, we forgot you were in Arizona. And they just called me like, hey, like it's last minute or last night. Like, do you want to grab dinner? It was really nice. So
that is nice.
Good to see extended family. Like I wish some people grow up in these families where the extended family is just like close family. But because my extended family all lived in different states, we didn't get to do a lot of that stuff. So, always like nice to connect, and it makes you wish that you would have been closer with them longer when you get together as adults, right? So,
yeah, I had the misfortune of my mom moved out to Oregon when in her 20s, and so all of her side of the family is back east. So all my cousins and uncles and aunts, everybody. So yeah, it was a rare occasion when we ever got together with them, maybe a couple times in my entire childhood, right? And my dad's side of the family, I didn't have any cousins. So yeah, it was I kind of feel like I missed out on that. I was always jealous as a kid of people who had like have these big family gatherings and events and whatnot. I always thought that would be really cool.
Yeah. But yeah, like especially like again, I had some friends who had cousins that were their age and they were super close, or and so they would, whenever they would have like family parties or barbecues, there would be like 10 kids over there, all family. And that was just not how my family was at all.
Yeah. Mine either. Yeah. No, I've been busy, work's been really busy and home and everything's going on. I'm actually pretty excited. I'm getting ready to go on vacation next week. So get out and, gonna have a little bit of unwinding for a while. So, but we're here to talk some football. Well, first of all, I will say this is a football broadcast, but shout out to the men's basketball team. They made a nice run through the Pac-12 tournament, winning that tournament, getting a bid, of course, to the the tournament, won their first game pretty handily over South Carolina, and then I thought played Creighton in round two. And Creighton is a team that many are picking to make the Final Four. They're the three seed in that region, and I thought, and Oregon took them to double overtime and really just kind of ran out of gas, ran out of bodies. But, you know, shout out to the men's team and Dana Altman for it was a rough year, kind of up and down, but they really finished strong.
Yeah, you can't ask for much more, especially when you're down to 8 scholarship players. I think we've referenced on the podcast before that chart that shows like average minutes missed per game by rotational players, and Oregon was like almost 2x the second highest
off
team.
The chart.
Yeah, like by themselves completely alone, and for them to pull it together at the end, make a run into the tournament. I mean, when they lost Shellstad, that game was done because they was just the last guy they could not lose. But a lot of people, I think, started to doubt Dana's ability to coach, which is wild to me because guys like that don't just forget how to do it. And he just showed up and put together a team at the end that was a team that we could all be really, really proud of. So I'm really excited, actually, about the future of men's basketball. I hope that they can keep the guys that they want to keep on the roster and then go out and add some nice pieces and then hopefully stay healthy next year and maybe make a deeper run.
Yeah, it feels like they've always had, ever since their Final Four run, they've had pieces. They've never just, you know, and then or someone gets hurt or, you know, at the wrong time of year, or they're missing one key component, like a shooter or a defensive player or something, you know. It just feels like they're always just one piece away from being a team that could make a, you know, a Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four type run. And, you know, maybe next year is the year they can kind of put it all back together again. But I mean, Dana Altman knows what he's doing. I think they're probably losing some really important guys this year with Cuisinart and Dante obviously moving on. But, you know, basketball, you can reload pretty quickly.
Yeah. I mean, Andrej Stojakovic was a player that Oregon was a finalist for a year ago. Ended up signing with Stanford, has hit the portal. I think that's a guy that Oregon could definitely use. And I'm just hoping that guys like Kwame Evans and Mookie Cook stay at Oregon and get healthy, and maybe Nate Biddle can play more than a couple games for the first time in his career. And you never know. I think they could have the foundation of a really fun team to watch next year. So hope they can put it together. But the good thing is, Doug, is unlike many Oregon fans, Oregon football fans, I'm actually not all that invested in Oregon men's basketball. So when they're good, it's a pleasant surprise. And when they're not, I can completely compartmentalize and not really care.
Yeah, it's the same way with me. I mean, I'm pretty much these days, college football is my one and only sport that I follow religiously and passionately and every single day of the year. That's probably not an exaggeration. But I do always want all Oregon sports to do well, right? And so when men's basketball is on a roll, hey, I'm tuning in. This is great. When women's basketball was good, I would say boat. But when they're bad, yeah, I don't care. I don't have to watch. Same thing with baseball and softball, which are both good teams this year and both could, you know, should be in the tournament at the end of the year as well. And, you know, volleyball, I know, had a really strong season as well. And all the other sports, I root for them all to do well, but I don't live and die by them. And if they lose, I just go, too bad, nice run, move on with my day. Not like football where I can stew on a loss for a long time.
Yeah, football can really jack up my ozone if we lose.
Jack up my ozone. I like that.
And I don't really mean that as like, I mean, I guess it works because we're Oregon fans ozone, but I mean like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. My atmosphere.
I never heard that term before.
Yeah. It's one I've stolen from a colleague and I was like, oh yeah, that's a good one.
Well, look, we got a couple things to cover today. It's certainly still kind of the slow time of year. There hasn't been a whole lot of visits kicking back in yet, even though it is open now. I think we'll see more of those after spring break. The Ducks open spring camp had 2 practices. Then they broke for finals week and spring break week, and then they'll be back next week. They'll reopen camp again and go through most of the month of April, culminating in the spring game there on the last Saturday of the month, which I will be at, of course. I think I'll also be hoping to try to make it down to Eugene for the coaches clinic here mid-month and maybe get my eyes on some practice time, which I won't be able to share too much about on this show for obvious reasons, but I hope to be able to check that out.
Oh, Doug, one more thing. I actually met a listener of ours by accident this week. Last Friday, I went to Angels spring training. They were playing, who were they playing? Good Lord. Regardless, I went to an Angels game last week, and I ended up sitting next to a couple from St. Helens, Oregon. And the gentleman actually ended up being a guy that was like, he was wearing an Oregon hat. I was wearing an Oregon hat. We started talking. All of a sudden, he's like, your voice sounds very familiar. Huh. I was like, well, I mean, I guess I make a Oregon football podcast with my buddy Doug. And he's like, oh, yeah, I listen to it all the time. So I know you're out there maybe possibly listening to this episode. It was a pleasure to meet you. And I think that's kind of cool that we actually have enough listeners that you can accidentally run into someone that listens to this show.
Yeah, I've had a couple of experience. Obviously, more likely for me, being up here in Oregon, I've had a couple of experiences like that. One was actually, I think, at the UW game last year, where I ran into somebody who was a listener, and then the other one was actually at work. Someone I work with stopped me in the hallway, and they're like, "Do you have a podcast?" I'm like, "Why, yes, I do." So that was kind of entertaining. Apparently, he wasn't a listener, but his buddy was, and they were in the car together, and his buddy was listening to our show, and my coworker was like, "I think I know that guy. I think that's Doug. I think I work with him."
That's Doug Scott. I mean, very distinctive. Yeah. And Doug Scott, he's a unique creature.
Yeah, that's for sure. Anyway, let's move on. So we got spring camp coming, spring game. We'll be on the Pac-12 network. It'll be your last time, I think.
Crap, Doug, I gotta ask you one more off topic.
Yeah.
Did you see the sneakers that are getting dropped? New. Or what are your thoughts?
The Ducks of a Feather ones.
Yes, those are fire.
So my first thought when I first saw them is like, it's weird they're not using like more like school colors.
I actually like it,
but I thought, well, but they always, everything's always green and yellow, right? Like, why not have something different? And honestly, I love them.
I could wear that colorway with so many different things. Like, that's why I like them, because like green and yellow is like a very harsh, like contrast.
It's not the school colors, but it's also not the school colors. Like, there's definitely a, you know, there's a vibe to them that they say Oregon to me. Like, I mean, obviously on them they say Oregon, but even I don't know. I like them. I like them a lot. If they were, I don't know. I'm gonna look at getting them.
Yeah, I hope they're not $600, but as long as they're not
the price
absurd
point matters.
Yeah, but I do like them, and I feel like I'd wear them all the time. So
If you guys haven't seen them, go check those out.
University of Oregon Nike Air Max 1, and they're dropping on Air Max Day, so I think that's like a couple days from now. So,
I believe it's tomorrow, or is it Wednesday?
You're the Nike guy, not me.
Yeah, I think it's tomorrow. All right, let's get into it. Spring game will be on the Pac-12 Network. I think it will be the last time, certainly the last time for football. We'll have to put up with the Pac-12 network. Do you have access to the Pac-12 network still, QB? What are you going to do?
I can pirate access occasionally. Yeah, I'll be able to watch. We'll figure it out. I'm actually going to
You will obtain access through legal means, of course.
Yes. Yeah. It's legal pirating. I'll actually be in Oregon for the spring game. Unfortunately, I won't because of... It's to spread some ashes for a deceased family member. I won't actually be in attendance at the game, but the hope is that you and I are going to get up for a practice before, so that at least I can see some Oregon football in person. So we'll figure it out.
That'll be sweet. But I'm looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward, quite honestly, to, I know this is controversial, I'm looking forward to not having to have any Pac-12 logos on our jerseys anymore, to be on the Pac-12 network anymore, and to all of the changes that are coming in sooner and sooner and sooner. On that note, let's get into our first story. The Pac-12 and the departing 10 schools have reached a settlement has been finalized, finally.
Well, this is going to be fun because I don't know anything about it, and so this is going to be like a first time hearing the details.
So the details are not fully available yet, but it dovetails off of, you know, if you recall all the lawsuits and everything that was going on way back in the fall. And then there was announced that the the schools had reached a settlement. And then it had later been said that, well, the details aren't totally final. It hasn't been signed off on yet, but the general parameters are there. Well, it's now finalized. We don't know all the details yet, but what we do know is that the Pac-2 will be confiscating $5 million from each outgoing school in the from the current year's revenue that all of the schools have earned together. So that's $50 million to the Pac-2, $5 million each coming from each of the departing 10. In addition to that, each of the departing 10 will also make an additional $1.5 million payment back to the Pac-2 at some point, I assume, in the near future. So $6.5 million total from each of the outgoing schools, which, you know, honestly, you know, it's not that much money, but it is $65 million then come, you know, to the Pac-2 schools. And, you know, when we go way back, I felt very confident that the Pac-10 or the 10 departing schools, wrongfully so, I felt confident that they might fight harder to keep all of this revenue from this current year and maybe some of the other assets that were in the conference and whatever. But what I didn't account for, QB, and this is really a mea culpa because I didn't consider this aspect of the whole thing.
From the standpoint of, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, but it's true. But from the standpoint of each of the outgoing schools individually, the amount of money in question is not that big, right? In this case, you're talking about $6.5 million they're foregoing each, and you know, maybe they could have recouped some of the other money and assets that are being held up in the Pac-12, maybe another $6 to $10 million each. So the total pot of money from each of those schools isn't that big. So their incentive to go fight for it isn't that high, especially when you figure attorney's fees, right? You're going to eat away at that pretty quickly. On the other hand, because for each of those schools, it's only 1/12 of the total pie. But for the Pac-2 schools, it's 50% of the total pie each. So they're like Oregon State and Washington State in this example, right? They're getting $32.5 million each, essentially. It's a lot easier to fight for $32.5 million. You have a lot more incentive to fight for $32.5 million than you do to fight for $6.5 million. And that's the part of it I didn't really think through when I thought that the departing 10 would fight harder on some of this stuff. As at this point, they just want to move on with their lives. They're all going to bigger and better conferences. Like, yeah, I'll write you a $6.5 million check. Now go away. Go away and be gone and let me move on with my life, right? So I think that was something I didn't really consider enough back in the fall when I was.
Well, I was told that they were gonna, like, splitting $260 million. What happened to that?
Well, no, the total pot is somewhere in that range. So the $65 million is basically the exit penalties. If it's not penalties because the grant of rights didn't call for any penalties, but it's a settlement amount where the 10 schools have basically agreed to give an additional $65 million total to the Pac-2 schools. Now, and above and beyond that, those two schools also control about $80 million in NCAA basketball revenue that get paid out over the next 6 years. So that's an average of maybe about $15 million a year over the next 6 years. It'll start high and dwindle down as the credits roll off. And then in addition to that, there's a Rose Bowl settlement, which is thought to be between $80 and $100 million. So that's how you get to kind of the 250 number, right? And then they have some assets too. Like, what is the Pac-12 network equipment worth? I mean, it's worth something, but also that's not cash, right? It's not liquid capital. You have to go find a buyer. You have to sell it. Who knows, it might be leased. Yeah, like, so that stuff is the value of those things is hard to ascertain, really. But the bulk of their assets lie in, you know, assets and revenue really lie in the $65 million, the $80 million in NCAA credits, and then the Rose Bowl settlement, which is somewhere between $80 and $100 million. So it's all told, it's around 250 for those things.
Is that including the settlement? Sorry, I'm just trying to make sure I'm
including the $65 million settlement we're talking about.
Got it.
Now, what is unclear out of this settlement is liabilities, right? Because it's not like this is free cash, right? Because the Pac-12 network also, or the Pac-12 conference also has liabilities. They just bought out George Kliavkov, whose contract was worth about $7 million. So they've got to pay that off. They have several pending lawsuits, one from the Holiday Bowl, one with the Dish Network. They have another one with wrongful termination lawsuits for the two executives that were laid off over the Comcast fiasco several years ago. So, you know, there's other liabilities there. And then, of course, they also have the current expense of the running the Pac-12 or Pac-2 network and Pac-2 conference, right? They've got a commissioner. They've got other employees. They've got a network that, you know, got to operate. That network has a lease liability of $10 million, right? So they're not, it's not just all this money. So in addition to, it's not just money free and clear, though, because they have liabilities as well, right? The Pac-12 conference has commissioner, has other staff, has support staff, has a $10 million facility where they run the Pac-12 network out of. They have a $10 million lease on, plus all of the whatever leasing costs for equipment and other things they have going on there. They said they're going to operate the studio for another year as well. So that means they're employing people. They have additional stat costs there. So whatever that cost to run is, they have Kliavkov's buyout, which was $7 million in that range. They have potential legal liabilities for several open lawsuits. If you add all those things up, it's probably not too far out of line with the amount of money they're getting in the settlement. So if you looked at it that way, it's essentially these 10 outgoing schools paying their share of those costs, right, which they all incurred together. So from that standpoint, it's probably pretty fair and reasonable. The other big news that did come out of the settlement was that the 10 departing schools get back all rights to all of their game footage, previous media, everything, for all of their historical catalog. Which is something that was that question, right? Is who, because technically by the agreement, the Pac-12 owned those things in perpetuity. And so I was always under the assumption that whatever settlement would be reached would include those rights going back to the individual schools, and they do. Now the Pac-12 also has rights to them, so the Pac-12 network will be able to, you know, show Oregon versus Oregon State highlights, or the Pac-12 conference will be able to show those things and use those things in the future as well for anything from this year and before. Obviously not anything going forward, but it's basically a dual ownership of rights now going forward for the 10 departing schools, which is great because obviously all the schools would need and want their historical footage. So all in all, I think it was probably a pretty fair outcome for all sides. I don't really see any big story here. I think, you know, the $250 million minus expenses, you know, you're probably talking somewhere in the neighborhood of $200 million capital for the Pac-12 or for the Pac-2 schools, which sounds like a lot, $100 million each. If they actually just distributed all, you know, $100 million each to each of the schools, that's about 3 years worth of revenue at current spending rates, right? So the Pac-12 conference distributed $37 million last year to each school. So if the Pac-12 conference distributed $33 million for the 24-25, 25-26, and 26-27 seasons to each of their two schools, then they would be getting about the same amount, slightly less than they have, you know, over the last few years. So they would be able to spend at existing levels for 3 years, but then they would be completely out of money.
It's certainly not an enviable position to be in.
No, and it sounds like a lot of money until you actually start thinking through how does that play out, because what they don't have is a media deal, right? So they don't, you know, they don't have that income coming in. Their only income is that $200 million that we're talking about, right? And actually some of that they don't even get until year six, right? So it's probably, you know, take $30 million off of that total for the first 3 years, they probably get $30 million less, because the $30 million will be in NCAA credits that come after the first 3 years. But they also owe $14 million to the Mountain West Conference for the scheduling agreement for this season alone. If they renew that again for the next season, which seems likely, they'll owe another, whatever, probably another $14 million, right? So now you're $30 million more down, right? The money goes pretty quickly, especially when you're using it to replace lost TV revenue. Because again, they will sell their TV rights to somebody, but it's going to be at a significantly less amount than they were getting, you know, in the Pac-12, right? So my estimate,
it's a bad situation because, like, again, this isn't
This isn't like they're not just getting a lump sum in addition to their regularly occurring payments. This is the last check. Like, this is like, oh, you lost your job, and this is your severance. You have to go find another job.
That's a good way to
now.
Think about it. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they will be able to stitch together some income, right, through the TV. I mean, they'll probably be able to sell their TV rights for $7-8 million this year, maybe each. Maybe. That might be generous. Obviously, the Oregon State game is probably the most valuable piece of inventory they have. Washington, I think, has the game versus Texas Tech, which is probably has some value. Those are probably the only two home games of any significant value to a TV network, right? The rest, maybe they could sell bundled to like CBS Sportsnet or FS1 or, you know, something like that. But it's going to be at, you know, G5 level, you know, pay because it's G5 level competition. But yeah, the way I figure it is if they distribute most of the money that's free and clear of liabilities to the two schools, then those two schools could operate at current spending rates for about 2.5 years. But they have said themselves, they don't plan. That's not their plan. Their plan is to actually try to rebuild the conference and use these assets to rebuild the conference. So you can't do both, right? You can't run at your same spending rate for the next 2 years and also hold this money to try to rebuild the conference, because then you wouldn't have it. So I think the reality is if they truly are going to try to rebuild the conference, and they have an agreement with the Mountain West in their scheduling agreement for this year, there are terms that allow the two conferences to be merged or the Pac-12 to bring on board all of the Mountain West. That would probably be the way forward that's cheapest for the Pac-12 schools and would allow them to keep most of this money for themselves. But any way you slice it, in year three, year four, they're looking at a significant decline in revenue.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, the way it strikes to me is that, like, I think the way that, like, this will actually be managed by the department, by the two, and the way that the fans talk about the money, because, again, it's a lot easier to talk about money that's not yours, and that you're not responsible for, are very different. Like, it seems to me that the actual people in control of managing this money will be far more responsible than fans who, like, to act like it's just, like, spending money, right?
Yeah, you listen to some fans on Twitter, and they're like, "Oh, we're gonna have a, you know, $100 million payout next year." I'm like, no, you're not. They're gonna keep most of that money in the conference. If they're smart, they will actually reduce payouts for next year. Like, I'm not talking about this current year, right? I'm talking about the first year that it's a two league conference. If they're smart, they will reduce payouts at least a little bit, right? Everyone try to tighten their belt a little bit, right? And then they can make the money last longer, and they'll keep the rest of the money in the conference coffers, because then they have the most flexibility, right? Because they either want to join another conference, they want to merge with another conference, or they want to go entice schools to join them. Well, they're going to need money for all of those things. And so if they just distribute it to Oregon State and Washington State, and Oregon State and Washington State spend it, then now they have no means to rebuild the conference, and they'll just, who knows what'll happen at that point. So yeah, I think you're right. It's not going to be some like massive spending spree in Corvallis and Pullman. And if you listen to the people at those schools, they're all saying the same thing. They're all like, we have a massive budget shortfall. We have to tighten our belt. We have to be smart with our money. We have to spend it prudently. they aren't expecting the conference to pay them out. And obviously they're the two voters, right? But they're not going to vote themselves a large distribution, because then they're completely cutting off their future options. They're going to be smart about it. They're going to vote themselves a flat distribution, maybe even a slightly negative distribution, so that they keep as much flexibility as possible for their going forward plans.
And again, it makes sense. Why? How else would you manage this? Because you look at the spending that they've already committed to, like in terms of coaching staffs, like Oregon State, right? They lose Jonathan Smith. Like, they make a pretty substantial cut in budget. So again, it all makes sense to me in terms of how it was managed. Like, it doesn't seem like there's this just like wild, irresponsible spending taking place.
No, and I think you'll see, as well, you know, Washington State lost their head basketball coach. So I think you'll see probably the next coach is cheaper there too, right? You could argue that Jonathan Smith leaving was probably long-term beneficial to Oregon State from a financial perspective.
Almost certainly, because, it helps them make Ray's that transition.
Making, what, a third of what Smith made? Maybe, you know, a third to a half of what Smith was making?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Smith was a very well-compensated coach to begin with.
But I think that, yeah, I think they were going to have to give him a raise again, though, if he was going to stay. So they're definitely better off financially with him moving on, regardless of the emotions of it, right?
100%. No question about it, especially because, like, they know they're going to be operating with this lesser budget. So when they made this hire, they made it with that understanding. And the guy who's taking the job took the job with that understanding, too. So there's a transparency piece to this, I think, which will be helpful for them in terms of retention of the coach that they have now. Because it's not like this is not a situation that was dropped at his feet like it would have been for Jonathan Smith. This was a situation that he took the job understanding.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He took a job realizing that the turmoil that your school is in, the uncertainty about its conference future, and that's part of the deal. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And the same thing will be true of, you know, the new basketball coach in Pullman, right? So it'll be, I'm glad this chapter's kind of getting behind us. I know I've certainly been sparring with a lot of Beaver fans back and forth on Twitter about this over the last 6 months. I don't know why I get caught up in that stuff, but I'm glad we're turning a page. And I think all the Pac-12 schools, or the departing 10 schools, I'm sure they're counting down the days. You know, we're now 4 months away from this conference, from Oregon and all the other 9 schools being out of this conference. And I think everybody's probably ready to move forward. I mean, not obviously they're going to play out spring sports, and they're going to, you know, all going to compete and, you know, do the right thing, you know, as they have been all along this year. All the departing schools have been doing the right thing, and they'll finish out the deal. And I think they're all very, very happy to move forward and have all of this behind them, have the settlement settled, have all of this stuff like in the rearview mirror, so they can all just move forward and not worry about this stuff anymore. And the Pac-2 schools will be left to figure out and chart their own future. And we don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I know I'm looking forward to, like, because the Big Ten announced today that, or I guess Fox announced today that they would be televising two Michigan and Ohio State games.
Spring games,
yep. And I know that I'm, like, looking forward to Oregon being able to take advantage and capitalize on that level of exposure. I think that'll be awesome for the brand, but I think also for fans and exposure and the ability to go out and recruit nationally. So things like that get me really excited about, like, where we're going, right? And I'm ready for that future. I'm ready to see that Big Ten patch on our jerseys, in our practice jerseys. So
yeah, I'm ready. I can't wait. You know what the next big excitement is going to be, QB, for that next big Big Ten excitement moment is going to be here sometime this spring, when you get the early announcements of specific games, right? So, you know, when the networks do their draft, right? So in the spring, the way it works is, this is kind of a little misnomer that a lot of people don't understand. They think the networks have a draft every week to pick which games of each week they want to televise. And actually, the draft happens in the spring, and they actually pick the whole season. So, for example, in the Big Ten, they have, you know, you got Fox, you got NBC, you got CBS, you got Big Ten Network, you got Peacock, right? So each one of them has a certain number of picks in a certain order, right? And so a lot of times in these deals, like, Fox may have the first four picks, or maybe Fox has the first two and then CBS has one and then Fox has one. And then, you know, it's not evenly dispersed, right? It's based on the contract, right? The bigger partner gets more picks and more early picks. But what you're actually picking is you can either pick a specific game. So in the Big Ten draft, the Michigan-Ohio State game is always picked first. And it's always Fox because Fox is the primary rights holder, right? But they just pick that game at the beginning of the year and say, we're going to televise Michigan-Michigan State in this time slot on Rivalry Weekend, right? And so they can announce the time of that game, you know, in spring. And then when each network has its turn, they can pick a specific game if they want, or they can pick the right to pick first in a certain week, right? So usually what will happen is the specific games will be picked early, right? So you'll pick the Michigan-Ohio State game. In this case, you might, you know, someone might pick Oregon. I assume Oregon-Ohio State will be a high pick and will be a specific game pick. But then as you get past maybe five or six total games of like those real premium games, right? Then maybe it's 10, I don't know however many. Then the networks will start picking time slots. They'll start saying, I want first choice on week 7. I want second choice on week 8, right? So they work their way through there. So then that's when you get into the individual games getting picked the week before or 2 weeks before the game actually happens.
So how many games do you think? Sorry, again, this is all new to me, so I've never known this. So how many, based off looking at our schedule, how many games do you anticipate that we'll have that are picked prior to slot? I think obviously Ohio State, I might be not answering that question correctly, but what I'm talking about is like with the understanding that the networks are going to have the ability to also pick games, not just time slots, what games of Oregon's do you think are going to be selected in that during that portion of the selection process?
I will answer that. First, I'll add a little caveat to it. The other thing that will happen there is any games that get shifted to Fridays will also get pre-announced, right? And so that may not be a game that was picked high, right? It might end up being, you know, the fourth pick of a particular weekend, you know, whoever the Friday game says, oh, we'll take Washington, UCLA, and that game will get moved to that Friday, right? So those games will also get announced in spring, right? The Friday game networks and times will get announced in spring, which is fine. But to go back to answer your question, I'd say at least two. I think the Michigan, Oregon and the Ohio State, Oregon games would be specific picks.
Yeah, I mean, those two for sure. Yeah.
Maybe Washington, Oregon would be another one, and that would be a prime candidate to move to Friday, to be honest. I don't love it, but it's probably likely. I mean, it would be Black Friday, so we've had plenty of civil wars on Black Friday as well. I think the other thing I'll add here too is that one of the beauties of this as well is that because the networks all have locked in time slots, you get more game times announced earlier too, right? Because if Fox knows that it has the Ohio State Oregon game, well, it won't be Fox, but bad example. Let's just say if Fox knows they have game X, they know that's Big Noon. That's their only time slot for Big Ten football, right? CBS is only 3:30 Eastern time, 12:30 Pacific time. And NBC is that, you know, the third window game, right? So if your school gets picked by that network, not only can they say it's going to be on NBC, they can actually announce the time because it is the only time slot that network has, right? So I fully expect Ohio State, Oregon to be on CBS. It'll be the 3:30 game on CBS in the old SEC time slot.
That's going to be so cool to have that time slot.
It can't be on Fox because they're not going to do 9 a.m. They're not going to do 9 a.m. kickoffs in the West Coast, so it can't be on Fox. I suppose maybe it could be on NBC in the third window, in the evening window East time, but I would expect it to be CBS.
That's a good time slot, though, for Eugene. Like, I think that like that will be a very nice time to watch a game in Eugene.
It's great. It's funny. We haven't had a lot of 12:30 kickoffs, or when we do, they're always the G5 game or the FCS game. Right. We've had over the last 5 or 6 years, I'd say we've had more of like the 5 p.m. kickoffs and the late night kickoffs and not as many of the 12. I love the 12:30. It's great. I guess we did have a couple last year. I do remember making breakfast at the tailgate more than once. So
I just think that that's a good, like when you think about tailgating, when I think about tailgating, like the game day experience, getting in and out of the stadium. Like, I always am like, hey, suck it up. We only get a couple of these a year. Like, there's no reason to complain about the time you get because it's kind of out of your control. But that time in particular, like, allows for really good tailgating. It allows for you to watch some games in the morning, those 9 a.m. kicks while you're tailgating. But then it also allows you to get out and watch the East Coast primetime games afterward, then get home if you have to drive back to Portland or things like that. So I think that that's going to be a time slot that I think it's a time slot that Oregon will probably get quite often at home. And I think that's going to be a time slot that is going to be something that really gets Oregon fans excited about this new, I guess, an unrecognized benefit of the changing conference and the situation Oregon finds itself in now in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think that time slot's going to be tough because that's always going to be a premium game, right? Because that CBS 12:30 game, that's the old SEC on CBS window. Those are always going to be, like, you know, one of your top two games of the Big Ten every week. So obviously a game like Ohio State, Oregon is going to be there. Maybe later in the year, you know, a Michigan, Oregon, or Wisconsin, or it could be in that time slot, right?
My point is, Doug, is that, like, that will be the big home game time slot.
Yes, for the biggest games. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, except unless you're playing a Washington or a USC, it won't be in that time slot. The other time slot I think you're going to see a lot more of is that NBC time slot, which is the, you know, 4 p.m. Oregon time kickoff, 7 p.m., 7:30 p.m. you know, East Coast kickoff. I think Oregon and all the West Coast schools, when they're good, are going to get that time slot a lot. One of the things that happened last year, because the new Big Ten deal actually started last season, and NBC had a pretty poor selection of games for a couple reasons. One, because, you know, there wasn't as much quality inventory without Oregon and USC and some of these other schools that are joining. But also, the Big Ten has historically had a rule that they don't play late night East Coast games. By that, I mean, you know, primetime kickoffs, those 7 p.m., 8 p.m. kickoffs East Coast in the second half of the season in the cold weather, right? Because they don't, you know, Michigan and Ohio State, like, refused to be on NBC in the second half of the year, November last year, because they didn't want to kick off at 7:30 when it's cold. And so I think that you're going to see a lot more of those, especially later in the year. I think you're going to see a lot more of those NBC games be on the West Coast, right? In Seattle, in Eugene, in LA, especially when they're either going up against each other or even going up against road teams, right? So now that team doesn't have to worry about the weather. It's not Wisconsin cold or Minnesota cold or Michigan cold, even in Eugene or Seattle. Like, it's pretty mild. It might be rainy, but it's not going to be zero outside.
Yeah. No, I think that just from a time, the more that's come out about this thing from a time slot standpoint, Duck fans are going to be pretty stoked about. Yeah.
Yeah. You've seen a lot of people talking about, oh, you know, these West Coast schools are going to get stuck in the, like, fourth window games, you know, the late night, the after dark time slot, blah, blah, blah. And I think there will certainly be examples of that, but they're not going to do that when a traditional Big Ten school is out here. Like, they're not going to send Purdue out to Eugene and put the game on at 10 o'clock kickoff in Purdue time. Like, that makes zero sense. Why would the networks do that? They're shutting off half their audience before the game kicks off. I think what you're going to see West Coast schools playing in that late window is either going to be when they're playing each other, right? So a UCLA-Washington or a UCLA-Oregon game could be in that late night kickoff, or when they're playing, you know, G5 schools in the beginning of the year, right? Or an FCS school at the beginning of the year. Like, okay, throw that game on FS1 in the late night window. Great, fine, whatever. So I think we'll see more of those late kickoffs in the out of conference schedule and less so in the conference schedule. All right. We talked a lot more about that than I expected.
Well, I actually thought, I think it's interesting, and I think it's actually, like, very educational for fans, like Oregon fans, because, like, I think that people had a lot of expectations that all we would do is play in the late night window and we would get screwed by all of this. And so I think it's a good thing to talk about. I think it's also cool that we're probably going to have a much higher proportion of our games predetermined in terms of time and date than we were used to.
Yeah, I mean, is Oregon going to have late night games? Sure, but so is everybody, right? Like, I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. I mean, so will USC, so will UCLA, so will Washington. But honestly, most of those on ESPN, who doesn't even have Big Ten content, right? Most of ESPN's fourth window games are going to be Big 12 now, right? So all the Arizona schools, Colorado, Utah, BYU, all of those schools will be hosting late night games most of the year, right? They'll all take their turn, so they'll have two or three or four each, but they'll fill out almost all of ESPN's content in that late night window. But even Fox, who also has a share of the Big 12, can put Big 12 games in that late window on a week to week basis too. So, like, look, think about it. If you're Fox and you have a fourth window slot you need to fill, are you going to put Oregon in there, who's a top five team in the nation right now for next year, obviously early, and who is over the last 5 years has been a top 10 team in terms of ratings? Or would you rather say, you know what, let's put them on the Big Ten Network where we can get a jumbo rating, or we can put them on an earlier game on a Friday, or we can put them in a NBC time slot or whatever. Are you going to do that, or are you going to put on, when instead in that late night window, you can put on like Arizona versus Kansas or something, right? Like, we'll see it all play out.
You're exactly right, though.
Actually, we're going to have it.
Go ahead. All right, let me interrupt you. Do you think, I just have all these questions now, do you think the Big 12 is ever going to get the premium Fox windows? Like, obviously they're not, they can never get Big Noon. But do you think there's any situation where they'll ever even have access to some of the better windows that are available on Fox and Fox Sports 1?
Well, and even you can go that far, say ABC or ESPN, right? So I think you look at Fox, they've got three windows primarily, right? They've got the Big Noon window, which is Big Ten dedicated. Then they have... They don't necessarily show three full windows of football every week. Most weeks they do, right? So then you think they also have the 3:30, or I'm going to go Oregon times here across the board. They have the 3:30 kickoff on Fox. Now that's opposite their own Big Ten game of the week on CBS, right? And then they have the third window, which is opposite their Big Ten SEC game or their Big Ten game on NBC. So I do think that they will have Big 12 games in those time slots, because they're contractually not allowed to show Big 10 games in those time slots. That's part of the deal, is that Big 10 is exclusive in each of those windows. So they probably will have a Big 12, like the Big 12, probably the best Big 12 game. Well, I don't know. ESPN probably has first choice a lot of weeks too. So yeah, I think they'll get some of the windows. I think they'll probably average about one a week.
Because
Fox also has baseball in the fall, and that starts taking away some of that third window time slot.
Okay, that makes sense.
Any other questions?
No, that answers all my questions. Hopefully, I'm playing the podcast dummy right now because I don't know any of this stuff, and so I'm hoping that I'm at least answering the questions that other people would have, or asking the questions that other people would have.
Yeah, the nuance about the way the network time selections work is something I only learned maybe about 18 months ago. I always just assumed it was like, well, this week, like when you think about the way the Pac-12 has worked, right? Like, well, this week Fox has first choice, and next week ESPN has first choice. And that's how I always thought it worked. And then I kind of learned that actually it's not how it worked. I think I learned because I went down a rabbit hole one week when like ESPN chose, seemed to have the first choice 2 weeks in a row. And it turns out it was because they actually do this draft in the spring where they pick those rights up. So. Yeah, all right. The other big news since we talked last QB is the CFP. The CFP updates. So the College Football Playoff has finalized their extension with ESPN. I think there's a lot of disappointment that ESPN continues to be the sole rights owner of College Football Playoffs. So they have extended that agreement for six additional years. So beyond the next 2 years are under the original agreement. And so the 6 years beyond that will take the event through, I think, the 2031 season. So which coincidentally lines up pretty closely with the next Big Ten deal will be come up around the same time. The SEC deal will come up a couple of years later. The Big 12 deal also comes up right around that time as well. So I don't know if that's a coincidence. I kind of think it's probably not. I think there was maybe some lack of interest in another network joining on, partly because the whole rights weren't available for the next 2 years. So if Fox or somebody wanted to get involved, they'd be paying a lot of money But in the first 2 years, they'd only have rights to first round games, maybe one or two first round games, and before they really start getting any possible action in year three. And I think that probably tampered down interest from the networks a little bit. I'm still hopeful that when this thing comes up again and the whole thing will be up and available for 2032 and beyond, is hopefully then you can get a second network involved and divide up the college football playoff rights across two, and ESPN and Fox would be the obvious ones. But also, who knows, the world might change 10 times over by then anyway.
Yeah, I'm I don't know. That's all more nuanced than my understanding, but I guess I was curious. I was a little bit curious that Fox wasn't at least involved in the bidding to try to get something, or maybe they were, but it wasn't reported or something I missed.
Yeah. I mean, and ESPN still has the right to sublease some games, so it's possible that Fox or somebody else could license a game or two from them, you know, in the first round particularly. But it could be any round, right? They could, if Fox is willing to pay the right price, maybe they could get a quarterfinal or a semifinal if ESPN is willing to sell it. So
if Fox is willing to pay more for one of those games, why wouldn't that have just been something that would have been beneficial to the actual schools or the conference is signing the deal to just get that extra revenue from Fox instead of letting ESPN make that profit?
I you would think so. I'm just spitballing that in theory they could. Who knows if they will, right? Maybe they're just going to wait and see how things play out. Moving on to the particulars of the deal, it's going to average $1.3 billion a year, which is about double on a, you know, considering there's also more games involved. It's a little more than double. I think it's two and a half times more than the current value. The big interest there is the way that this money is going to be divided now in the new deal is significantly different than the old deal. And I think it really recognizes the changing landscape of the sport and the imbalance of value between the Power Two conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC, and the rest of the schools in FBS football and the rest of the conferences in FBS football. And so the way that $1.3 billion is going to be allocated. Now, first of all, keep in mind, nothing's changing for the next 2 years. So 2024, 2025, 12-team playoff, 5 automatic bids, 7 at-large bids. Every Power Five school plus Oregon State, Washington State get about $6 million a year for the next 2 years in baseline money. And then you have the additional, you know, $6 million each for making the playoffs, right? So next 2 years, status quo. Starting in the third year, which is the 2026 season, is when everything will shift. And at that point in time, the Big Ten and the SEC will get 29% of the revenue each. So on an annualized basis, that's an average of, for the SEC, it'll be about $23 million per school because they have 16 schools. And for the Big Ten, it'll be $21 million per school because they have 18 schools. So they actually went back to, it's funny because in the original CFP deal, the payouts were per conference. And then the SEC complained because they had more schools and the Pac-12 was making more money per team than the SEC was making per team. So over the last couple of years, they actually shifted it to per school payouts. But now they're going back to per conference payouts. And I kind of have a theory about this. It hasn't been said, but it's my theory. So they went back to per conference payouts. So the SEC and the Big Ten get 29% each. $23 million per school, $21 million per school. So you keep that in mind. So from Oregon's standpoint, you're going from $6 million a year in college football playoff money right now to $21 million a year 2 years from now. That's a 3.5 you know, times more money.
Yeah. The most interesting piece to me with all this, and I don't know if you have the answer to this question, is going back to like what is being paid for the product by ESPN, what's the per game rate? Is it high? Is it substantially higher than it was when the first contract was signed, or is it watered down now because there's extra rounds?
I mean, I guess they didn't value the first round games that highly. So they actually said you can expand to 14 teams if you want. We'll get to that in a second. It hasn't been settled, but we're not going to give you any more money. So I think they were valuing the first round games at like $20 million a game or something. It was not very high. So if you think about it, the 1.3 per year, and I'm sorry, I'm going to do the math by while we're talking here, the 1.3 billion per year average, and that's at 11 games. So that works out to be about $118 million per game. In the current deal, you're talking about, I think it was about $420 million for four games, about $105 million per game. Oh, actually, it was six games because you had the, sorry, I forgot, they also were paying for the New York six games. So you actually had seven games total in the current deal. So about $60 million. So it's about double. It's about double on a per game basis, which in this market, in this climate, is probably not bad.
Yeah, like with pretty solid.
Yeah, stepping back to the payouts. So then the ACC gets the third most. It's about $13 million per school, $13.5 million per school. So pretty significant step down from the Big Ten, and then the Big 12 gets a little bit less than that. They get about $12 million per school. And so the way that was based is it was kind of based roughly on participation over the first 10 years of the playoff in the, you know, recognizing the participation of Texas and Oklahoma as SEC participants and as Oregon and Washington as Big Ten participants. Right. And it's roughly equivalent to that participation rates over the last 10 years. Actually, if it's the Big Ten, and if it was a straight line by participation, the SEC would be getting even more, as would the Big Ten, and the Big 12 would be getting significantly less. But I think they kind of smoothed it out a little bit, you know, kind of pushed everything toward the center a little bit more than just a straight percentage would be. And then beyond those, the group of five schools will get about $1.6 million per school. And Oregon State and Washington State will get $3.6 million per school, but it's only guaranteed for the first 3 years of the extension. So they have $6 million per school each for the next 2 years, and then 3.6, they actually take a 40% pay cut in CFP revenue in year three, four, and five, and then they have no guarantees beyond that. So depending on what happens with their new conference and their realignment or whatever, then they'll get slotted in. They'll have to negotiate for whatever their new amount will be. A couple of the things of note here: there's no longer a participation bonus. You know, if you remember in the current setup, there's a $6 million bonus for making it to the playoffs, $4 million for making it to the nearest six games. That goes away now. There was a lot of talk about there being a heavy slant toward participation in this new deal originally, and then they actually completely wiped it out, and it's now all base pay. So outside of one caveat, an independent school who makes the playoffs will get a $6 million bonus. So that really only applies to Notre Dame and UConn and potentially Oregon State and Washington State, because I think they're sort of being treated by independents right now by the CFP. So if any of those schools make the playoffs, they get a $6 million bonus. Notre Dame gets a base payout of about $12 million, which is in line with the Big 12, but $18 million if they make the playoffs. Most years, you would think Notre Dame probably will make the playoffs in most years. So if you factor that in, their payout's about $18 million, which is above the ACC, slightly below the Big 10, but something that would allow them to continue to be independent, you know, without any issue from a financial standpoint. Yeah. So that's kind of how the money's being allocated. My theory on why they did it by per conference is to actually kind of, I don't want to say penalize, right? But I don't think the Big Ten and the SEC want the Big 12 just to be able to add a bunch of schools and claim a bigger share, right? Yeah. So now if the Big 12 adds schools, you don't get any more revenue. You just have to split your share of it smaller and smaller and smaller. You're not taking it, you know, because if it was just a per school payout, then the Big 12 could add six schools and say, oh, now we get six more shares. And another Big Ten and the SEC, I don't think want that.
Another angle, too, is if you are an existing school in the Big Ten or the SEC, if you're Purdue, if you're Mississippi State, you're not being punished for probably not participating in the actual playoff itself as often. But you're almost getting like a grandfathered payment for being an early member of the conference.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, and that's the argument a lot of people make is, you know, why does Vanderbilt get $23 million a year in college football playoff money and, you know, Kansas State or Texas Tech or, you know, Florida State get significantly less? I mean, yeah, it's luck of geography, I guess. but that's the way it's going to play out, at least for the next 8 years now.
Yeah.
I think the big thing coming out of this is like it just puts the Big Ten and the SEC at even a bigger financial advantage, right? You are looking at there already to be, you know, a $30 to $40 million gap in media revenue between what the Big Ten's making and what, say, what the Big 12 or ACC is making on an annual basis. Now you're talking another $8 million on top of that, right? $10 million on top of that. So now that gap is, instead of $30 to $40 million a year, is $40 to $50 million a year per school. I mean, that's 2/3 of your football budget for a school that's competing at the highest levels. I mean, that's a significant gap. And that's why you're seeing schools like Clemson and Florida State trying to get out of the ACC, because they're seeing that this $40 to $50 million a year gap is, you know, untenable for them for the future.
Yeah. Well, and do you think it'll have a negative or a positive effect on the value of the playoff if there's additional consolidation with those schools from the ACC?
I think there'll be a positive impact on the value of the playoff. I mean, the reality is that look who gets watched, right? You know, I think you're talking about 85% of viewership now is in those two conferences. 85% of college football playoff viewership is in the 34 schools that are in those two conferences. Now, if you add Florida State, Clemson, now you're talking probably 90%. So, I think a lot of this consolidation and realignment is just about how do we get more brand-on-brand matchups, right? If you've got two teams that bring eyeballs instead of just one, you know, how many more eyeballs is that getting? How much more value is that to the advertisers and to the networks, right?
Well, I was thinking more from the perspective of with the ACC having bids, Florida State and Clemson add, assuming that they're primarily going to be the teams that get the bid, are going to be adding additional eyeballs more than, I guess, I don't know, the distribution of bids will probably change too if they move. No, it's not.
Let me get to that. There are no bid distributions. So they completely punted on the format of the playoffs. That has not been decided yet. They have agreed on revenue. They have not agreed on how many, outside of the next 2 years, which are locked in, they have not agreed on how many teams are going to be in the playoffs starting in 2026 and how those bids are going to be awarded and started in 2026. There was a lot of momentum for 14, as you know, and there was a lot of momentum at a point in time for there being, you know, three each to the Big Ten and SEC, two each to the Big 12 and ACC, and then one wild card or whatever, you know, or hit. And that kind of has faded. And then there was another model being pushed around was two each to the Big Ten and SEC, and then one each to the ACC and Big 12, one group of five, and then the rest being wild cards, which actually I would be fine with. But then I think the most recent momentum has just been 5-9, just 5 auto bids and 9 at-larges. So one for each of the 4 conferences plus one G5 and then 9 at-larges.
Well, that I like
seems
that, actually.
To be the latest way it's blowing, which I actually think would be, I would just do that if I was in charge.
That sounds the best. And the only way that it would make sense to do 3 auto bids, but again, ultimately in that setup, 4 teams are probably going to get bids anyway from each conference. Is if they did a first place game and a third place game, whereas the first place game, like in that 14 team model, got you the first round bye in the Big Ten and the SEC.
Right.
And the third place game was for the third auto bid.
Yeah, that makes sense. But you know, like I mean? You said, in most years in a 14 team playoff, your fourth place team's probably in anyway.
Yeah, so then it really devalues that secondary conference title game or that third place conference title game.
I think there was, you know, there was a lot of push about the Big Ten SEC looking to have the guaranteed buys in a 14 team model that got a lot of public outcry, and even the 3-3, 2-2, 1-1-1 got a lot of public outcry. I think there's a notion that that was all just kind of being used as leverage for the financial side of it, which I could be true, right? Because I think at the end of the day, and there's all this talk about the Big Ten and SEC like splitting off and doing their own thing and Super League and all that stuff. And if I'm the Big Ten and the SEC and I'm getting everything I want out of this deal anyway, why would I want to split off? Like they have no one, there's no incentive. Like they're getting all the money, they're getting all the benefits, they're getting all the. I mean, yeah, you could split off and do your own thing and have a Big Ten versus SEC playoff. You're probably going to make the same amount of money. right? And you're going to piss a bunch of people off. And now you have to run this thing and you have to have your own. You're not part of the NCAA, so you've got to replicate a whole governance structure. Like, why would you want to do that? If we can just power broker our way through the CFP negotiations and get, you know, 60% of the revenue to split two ways, great. Why not?
Yeah, it's
brilliant.
Makes sense.
It's brilliant on their part. I get it. If the ACC does fall apart and those teams disperse, guess where most of that revenue is going to go? It's going to go to the Big Ten. It's not like those ACC revenues going to all of a sudden. If Florida State and Clemson and Miami and North Carolina and Virginia Tech or whatever all end up in the Power Two, they're not just taking 6/17 of the ACC money with them. They're going to take most of it because that's the other part of this deal is any realignment will trigger a renegotiation of the monetary split. And it ain't going to be split evenly by teams. It's not going to be like, oh, well, 11 of the ACC teams went to the Big 12. So therefore, you know, 11/17 of the ACC money will go to the Big 12. No. That's not how it's going to work.
So
not when the six most valuable brands went to the other two conferences.
So in a situation where, let's just say, Florida State and Clemson go to the SEC, and there are 18 as well. I don't think it would be this clean of a split, but I would assume that the SEC would keep the same share that they have now, or do you see a situation where the Big Ten and the SEC would actually have different splits?
I think they will. I think that in their current operating model, they will keep the same splits. I think that that equity is a real big key to this partnership. And so I think there's a reason it's 29-29, even though the team counts aren't equal. And my guess is in that scenario, their splits will be even. Now, it won't be 29-29. If it's, let's just say in this scenario you're talking about, where those are the only two teams that join and they join the SEC and it's 18 Big Ten, 18 SEC, it's not going to be 29% each. It's going to be 35% each or whatever they tell the rest of the schools it's going to be. You know, let's just say it's 35% each, right? And then the rest will get split up similar to how it is now, right? But I think those percentages are going to stay the same because I think that equity is really key to this partnership.
Yeah, I agree. I was just curious what your take would be on that. And we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But it'll be very interesting to see where those ACC schools end up if there is a way out of the grant of rights.
Yeah, I know we got to wrap this up, but I did want to add one more thing on that.
Okay, last thing.
I'm really interested to see what happens, not just with the ACC and what all happens there, but with the Big 12. And I don't mean, I think they're safe right now, but I mean in their next contract, because there's a lot of people that say, oh, the Big 12 will gobble up like all the leftover ACC teams and they'll become this like 24 team super conference or whatever. I think as the Big 12 stands with 16 teams, I would be worried if I was them about their next TV contract, because I could see it being flat. I could even see it having less value than it does now, because all the air in the room is going to get sucked up by the Power Two over the next 6 years. And that's where all the eyeballs are. That's what all the conversation is going to be. And the Big 12, the ACC at least has top level teams that can keep not the conference relevant, but those teams relevant, right? But the Big 12 doesn't have that. And I think even at 16, their next deal could be flat or worse. But if they add all the leftover ACC teams that have not great value anyway, well, they're just diluting themselves. They are diluting themselves into a worse payout in the next
contract. But they also could embrace the gambling aspect of things before the other conferences do, which I think they will. I think your mark is smart enough to do that. And they become a very valuable gambling operation or asset, right?
So I don't
think it'll be flat. I think that enough people will watch. As sports gambling gets legalized around the country, all sports are going to get watched at a higher level, in my opinion, even, especially like those middling but still competitive leagues like the Big 12.
And the Big 12 is going to be a really fun league to bet if you are a better, because there's going to be so much parity.
Yeah. And we'll do our picks in an upcoming show, but you listen with a lot of people doing early picks on the season, and they're like, I could see 10 different teams winning that league this year out of 16. Yeah, it's crazy parity. And we've talked about that before, too. So that is fun from that standpoint. All right, QB.
Sounds like a good place to wrap it up. We'll get to the questions on the next episode, and we'll have to reconvene. I know spring ball, I believe they practice tomorrow.
No, they're on break.
I thought it was last week.
They're on break for 2 weeks.
Oh, it's 2 weeks?
Yeah, 1 week for finals, 1 week for spring break, and then they will come back next week.
Got it. Okay, well, I'm wrong. Fair enough.
It doesn't happen often.
Well, it happens enough.
All right, QB, thank you all for listening. He's QB11 at QB11SD. You can find me at DouglasTS, and you can find the show at QB11Show. All of those are on X, formerly known as Twitter. Can I just call it Twitter still? Yeah, okay. It's on Twitter. Find us there. Thanks all for listening. Good night.